is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehius Wahib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
80 rescued victims have so far been allowed to return to their families. Authorities say the remaining 20 are being monitored and treated in a state hospital.
That's Timothy Obiezu reporting on the rescue of 100 kidnapped victims in Nigeria. Details coming up. Also, Tanzania's opposition leader has been detained by police. And childhood vaccinations have lost years of gains because of the COVID-19 pandemic. These stories and more ahead on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Tanzania's main opposition party, the Party for Democracy and Progress, also known as Chadema, says police have detained their leader, Freeman Mbowe. He was arrested before he was scheduled to speak at a conference to announce demands for constitutional reforms. Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
The statement from Chadema's communication director, John Mrema, shared on Twitter, says Freeman Mbowe and 10 other Chadema members were rounded up at night in Tanzania's northwestern port city of Mwanza. The party condemns the repression of the rights of Tanzanians with the strongest force. These are the signs that the dictatorship that existed during the rule of President John Magufuli continues, the statement said. Mbowe was approached by an army of police officers in his hotel when he arrived at 2:30 a.m. Wednesday and was arrested together with other leaders of the party, according to the local reports. While other Chadema members were taken to Mwanza police station, there has been no information about Mbowe's whereabouts so far. We want the police to come out and say where the chairman is and why he was arrested, the opposition party statement said. The deputy chairperson of Chadema, Tundu Lissu, pleaded for action in support of the country's civil society. Calling for political reforms is no breach of any law, he said. Lissu said that he urges Tanzania's development partners to stop subsidizing the CCM dictatorship and to support democracy in a Twitter post Wednesday. The Chama cha Mapinduzi is the country's ruling party and the second longest ruling party on the continent. On Monday, Mbowe said the party will not leave the city until the new constitution conference takes place, telling the government if it intends to prevent them from organizing the conference, they should enhance their skills to fight the people. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
Some analysts are blaming the worst outbreak of public violence in democratic South Africa on the failure of the African National Congress, or ANC, government to institute meaningful reforms. Riots and looting followed the imprisonment last week of former President Jacob Zuma for contempt of court for his refusal to testify at an inquiry into corruption in which he allegedly played a key role. The analysts say current conditions in South Africa mean that further violence is inevitable. Darren Taylor has more.
South African think tank, the Center for Risk Analysis, supplies information to some of the world's top companies to help them decide whether or not to invest in the country. It's been forecasting anarchic protest action and looting for the past 2 years. The center's been warning of inflection points or sparks that will cause blow-ups, as it puts it. One of those happened 2 weeks ago when former President Jacob Zuma went to jail. Dr. Franz Cronier directs the center and is a scenario planner and business strategist. He's written 2 books on South Africa's future. He says, like many around the world, he was optimistic when Cyril Ramaphosa replaced Zuma as president in 2018, but now he thinks reform is stillborn. Cronier says Ramaphosa had and still has the authority to make South Africa a better place. But he told a BizNews webinar the president has so far failed to confront several crises that could soon cause further blow-ups. Arguably, the most serious crisis, says Cronier, is that at least 10 million young people don't have jobs.
They wake up every morning, not sure what the day is going to hold. They don't have that sense, you know, that dignity of labor, of earning something, going back to their families and saying, we did this for you. That's a very powerful social force.
He says it's an easy force to mobilize because its members are poor, angry, reckless, restless, hopeless, and strong, with nothing to lose, which makes it dangerous. Linked to this, says Cronier, is the failure of successive ANC governments to provide good quality public education.
Schools leave the majority of young people in a position where they are unlikely to be gainfully employed and very unlikely to ascend to the middle classes.
Then he says South Africa's economy has been crumbling since the Zuma administration, a period when corruption rose, whereas the first decade of democracy saw an impressive rise in living standards.
And if you have such a rise and then followed by stagnation, the expectations you created in the initial rise are unmet, and that breeds a lot of political frustration.
He says the fact the ANC remains in power is more a reflection of voter apathy than an indication of its popularity. He notes more people are entitled to vote but choose not to than the number who vote for the ANC.
In that respect, the ANC is in fact not the majority party in the country anymore. The majority party is in fact not a party. It's a group of frustrated South Africans who look around the political spectrum and think that they don't see anything that represents their interests or that they can believe it.
But, insists Cronier, the dread force at play in South Africa is the exclusion from the economy of millions of citizens. That, he says, allows relatively minor events and fringe characters to trigger massive upheaval. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Fishermen on the shores of some of South Africa's most pristine beaches in northern KwaZulu-Natal have been warned about a deadly chemical spill. Rioters allegedly set a chemical factory and storage facility on fire last week, leading to a toxic leak into a nearby river that flows to the sea. Reporter Vicky Stark spoke to KZN Subsistence Fishermen's Forum, Desmond Dessa.
Dessa, who is also an environmental activist, says community groups and the government are working hard to determine the extent of the damage. Water testing samples have been taken, but the results are not available yet.
Obviously, it's a lot of chemicals. Some of the major chemicals that are part of the production of fertilizers and pesticides have been released into the air, but not only in the air, but also into the river estuary and it's into the sea or from Soji. Lots of fish have died. So particularly in the north coast where this happened around and some rocks, I would exercise caution and not eat the fish there or even take any of the dead fish if you come across it. Please do not eat the fish.
For now, no warning has been given to fishermen in other parts of the province or country. But Dessar says there are thousands of poor subsistence fishermen in the affected northern region who will suffer because of the spill.
We're appealing to the government to come out with a package that can support most of the fisher folks that fish out of there. Durban alone has got over 15,000 fishermen. Means that a lot of fisher folks are going to be hungry and would have to join the poverty queue to access food. So it is a problem, but government has to come to the party. They're talking about relief. Those are the people who would be immediate relief because they depend on the sea, and during the COVID, they weren't banned from fishing.
The rioting and vandalism began nearly 2 weeks ago, starting with protests by supporters of Jacob Zuma. The country's former president went to prison late on July 7th to serve a 15-month sentence for contempt of court. The riots gripped KZN, where he is from, and Gauteng, where many members of his Zulu tribe live. The violence claimed 215 lives. Police say while calm has mostly returned, cleanup operations are underway and food is being taken to those in need. They remain on high alert. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
Nigerian authorities say they have secured the release of 100 people abducted by bandits last month in northwest Zamfara state and without paying any ransom. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The Zamfara State Police spokesperson, Shehu Mohammed, Tuesday said the victims, who are mostly nursing mothers and children, were rescued 42 days after they were kidnapped in Maru area of the state. He said their release was facilitated by the state's Ministry for Security and Home Affairs through a dialogue with bandits. No ransom was paid. Meanwhile, 80 rescued victims have so far been allowed to return to their families. Authorities say the remaining 20 are being monitored and treated in a state hospital. The bandits invaded Manawa village in Maru local government area on June 8 and took the victims away into a nearby forest. Northwest Zamfara State is one of the hotspots in Nigeria's lingering mass kidnappings for ransom attacks. This week, suspected bandits attacked a police formation in the state and killed at least 13 officers. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Childhood vaccinations have lost years of gains because the COVID-19 pandemic disrupted normal health services. The World Health Organization and the United Nations Children's Fund say more than 23 million children missed routine shots last year, compared with 3.7 million children who missed out in 2019. Many of those children are in sub-Saharan Africa, as Mavis Ochera in Yowassa, in the Ashanti region of Ghana, reports.
Antoinette Bangouz is UNICEF's Eastern and Southern Africa's regional coordinator for immunization based in Nairobi. She says globally, the childhood vaccination rate went back to the level it was in 2010 due to COVID-19. She says globally, the coverage of first dose of diphtheria, tetanus and polio vaccine dropped from 86% in 2019 to 23% in 2020.
We need to make sure that the gains that we have lost going back 10 years will be restored as soon as possible. But above all, that everything will be done, that this will never happen again, that the immunization services will be strong enough to be resilient to any future emergency like this.
Bangouz says in Africa, the COVID-19 pandemic led to lower reported coverage of initial childhood vaccinations. Of the 23 million children who missed out on basic vaccines in 2020, 10 million of them live in Africa. She says the number of children who did not receive any initial dose of vaccine in Africa increased to 7.7 million to 7.1 million in 2020. 42 countries had lower diphtheria vaccine coverage. However, she notes, while the situation is bad, there is a bit of good news for Africa.
Countries are focusing on ongoing efforts to control the pandemic through the introduction of the COVID-19 vaccine. This should not lead to the continuation of children missing out vaccination. In Africa, we have observed that there is a relatively lower drop in vaccination coverage in Africa compared to other regions. And this could reflect that some effort were put in place to recover from the acute drop at the beginning of the year.
She says the key goal of immunization agenda was to make vaccinations available for all by 2030. And it is important to ensure that children have access to initial doses of vaccines. Bangouz says the pandemic not only disrupted routine initial immunizations, but also booster shots done at regular intervals to strengthen protection against measles and polio. She says there needs to be investments not only in immunization, but also primary health care or the most vulnerable populations. So when an outbreak, epidemic, or another emergency occurs, they are protected. She called for investment in reimagined immunization programs to break the stagnation stagnating vaccination coverage rate seen over the past few years.
We need to put in place measures to address the needs of the children that did not receive vaccination, but in a comprehensive way, taking into account an approach that focusing on primary health care. Children who did not receive any initial dose of basic vaccines, the so-called zero-dose children, are those children who live in countries in the African continent and part of the continent affected by conflict. So these children are likely to lack access to other health and welfare services, and they are subject to multiple deprivation.
She says in Africa last year, three countries were in the 10 top countries with the highest number of children unprotected against measles. A total of 6 million children from these countries were unprotected. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
In a new report, Human Rights Watch accused the Kenyan government of failing to properly handle a cash transfer program intended to help the poor during the COVID-19 pandemic. The rights group says the money instead went to people connected with officials and politicians. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
42-year-old Annette Okumu lost her business due to COVID-19. She and her neighbors in the Kibera section of Nairobi registered for a government cash support program in April to help her feed her 9 children.
Mzee hakuwa na kazi. Then nilikuwa nahitaji kwa sababu niko na mtoto mwenye ako na sickle cell anemia.
Okumu says her husband was jobless and she really needed that money because she has a child who has sickle cell anemia and the disease requires her to feed her child healthy food. Okumu says she was hopeful that she will receive help from the government. She says she did not get the money, but others did. In May of last year, President Uhuru Kenyatta ordered the Treasury to release some $100 million to support the country's most vulnerable people for at least 8 months. The head of Human Rights Watch in East Africa, Otieno Namwaya, says that money never served its intended purpose.
Most of the households that were supposed to have received support from government never received anything. The few who received something did not receive the amount the government said it had sent to them. Majority over the period of 8 months received only 3,000 to 4,000. The government is saying that it was sending a total of 35,000 for the period of 8 months.
The Washington-based rights group says its investigators spoke to 136 government employees and Nairobi residents for its 8-month study. The researchers found that the cash transfer program lacked transparency in multiple ways, from the registration process to the distribution of funds. A report released by the Office of the Auditor General in April 2021 said that some $4 million was disbursed to help nearly 100,000 Kenyans in a poor section of Nairobi for 1 month. But the investigators said they could not verify the identities and addresses of more than 97,000 alleged recipients. Their report concluded the lawfulness and utilization of the $4 million could not be confirmed. Namwaya says most of the money instead went to friends and family of officials and the employees of certain government agencies.
Politicians and government officials actually ensured that their official aides and people working in their offices and relatives were actually benefiting from the money, when the evidence suggests that these people did not actually deserve to get the money. While the people who really deserve the money, people who are going hungry for even as many as 4 days in a week, were not getting the money.
The program was run by the Ministry of Labor and Social Protection. VOA reached out to the Principal Secretary of the Ministry for comment, but received no response. Human Rights Watch is calling on Kenyan authorities to investigate the issue and extensively review and strengthen internal mechanisms for implementing such programs in the future. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
For the first time since U.S. President Joe Biden took office in January, the United States has launched an airstrike targeting Al-Shabaab fighters in Somalia. Pentagon spokeswoman Cindy King said the U.S. Military Africa Command, in coordination with the Somali government, conducted an airstrike in the vicinity of Gaklayo, located 700 kilometers northeast of Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. The initial assessment by the U.S. command says no civilians were injured or killed as a result of the strike. The Nigerian D-Tigers basketball team stunning victories this week in friendly matches with the United States and Argentina has pushed it further into the Olympic spotlight. The Nigerians are the only African basketball team competing at the Tokyo Games. Despite some challenges, their performance this week has raised hopes among supporters that they could take home a medal. We have Timothy Obiezu again reporting from Abuja.
The Tigers beat the United States NBA Stars 90-87 on Saturday in Las Vegas, making international basketball history as the first African nation to beat the U.S. On Monday, the team topped it off by beating the world's fourth-ranked team, Argentina, by a score of 94-71. But the Nigerian team was later slammed by Australia 108-69. It was the team's first loss in the tune-up games for the Olympics. Despite that, Nigerian basketball fan David Moge says he's very optimistic about the team's performance of the games in Tokyo.
Well, I see them having a chance to do great things in the Olympics because they have a coach who has a lot of NBA experience and background, you know. So he will be bringing a lot of structure in terms of offensive plays, defensive plays, and keep the team going.
Nigeria is one of 12 teams that qualified for the Olympic tournament. The team is started with former NBA stars, including Gabe Vincent, Chikezie Okpala, and Precious Achiuwa of the Miami Heat. The squad is led by award-winning NBA coach Mike Brown. The secretary of the Abuja Basketball Club, Anthony Ekpenkyo, says the diaspora experience is an advantage for the Nigerian team.
We have players who will match them, pound for pound, height for height. Okay, so I think that's great. We took our time to select some of our tallest and best players.
Nigeria's the Tigers must do well in Group B competition against Australia, Germany, and Italy to reach the quarterfinals. Meanwhile, a Nigerian Olympic delegate in their 60s was hospitalized Thursday in Tokyo after testing positive for COVID-19. The coronavirus has infected many athletes and delegates, and experts warn that the situation could worsen. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyesu Hibit in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the